Barry, what's happening, my friend?
Hey, how are y'all?
All right.
Sure. I don't want to say the word good. I'll just say, yeah, I'm struggling a lot right now, but it's okay. It's you know, I'm here. I'm alive. Good to go.
I got you.
One of those days.
It's been a wild NFL season, hasn't it?
Yes, it has been. It's been a really wild one. And, you know, I think a game like this even shows that, where Barry, you got some really good teams, some really good quarterbacks. Tom Brady seems to play forever. But at the same time, you also got a situation where you've got a team at 5-7 taking on a team 6-5-1, and both these teams are fighting for playoff spots right now.
Absolutely. It's just a crazy, crazy time. Everybody's trying to get into those number 6, number 7 seeds. Last year, the NFL allowed a 7th seed in both conference, and they continued it to this year, which means that there's only one team that'll have a bye in each conference. But it also means that two other teams will be able to go to the postseason.
Well, I think, yeah, do you like it, the fact that they added an extra team, Barry, or do you like it when they just had the traditional, you know, 6 teams out of each conference and then, you know, the first 2 seeds get byes? Is there a preference, or does it not really matter to you?
Well, it's all about money. So the more games that they have, the more money that they make. It's like in any kind of professional sport. If you got best of 7, that means you got a minimum of 4 games. And if you can go 7, that's 3 more gates and 3 more television revenue that you didn't have. And so the NFL, they make money off of everything. Mm. They've got the official beef jerky of the NFL. They've got the official deodorant of the NFL. It's like they've got Oakley on board that provides all those visors that just pays them millions and millions. So all of this revenue, it doesn't have to come from the gate. It doesn't have to come from stadiums, as it proved with COVID last year. Otherwise, you look at how many restaurants and how many businesses closed up because of COVID. Is the NFL?
Yeah, to me, this is where I think the NFL, and there's been discussion about this, should they really be playing this many games? And then, you know, I hadn't really thought about it until you mentioned, you know, how many games they play in the postseason if they end up going all the way. So you theoretically play 17 games during the regular season. It no longer becomes this deal of, 18-0 or, 19-0. I mean, they legitimately play. You're playing upwards of 21-ish games. Is that too many games for these NFL players to be playing?
Well, most players will tell you yes. But
right.
From 1983 to 1985, the United States Football League, they played an 18-game schedule. They played one preseason game and then 18 regular season games. Then they played a full playoff round. Now, they only had 6 teams make the playoffs, but they played 18 games like it was nothing back then. Dan Fike, offensive guard for the Browns, he grew up in Pensacola, went to Pine Forest High School, went to University of Florida. He played for Tampa Bay in the USFL his first 2 years, and then in the same year went to Cleveland Browns, so he played 18 games and 16 games. And I asked him, I said, what's the biggest thing about 18 games? He said, the wear and tear on your body. He said, another thing is you've got a matter of attrition when it comes down, because if you've got a bunch of guys hurt that are, say, outside linebackers, you're looking for players that can fill voids, whether they're on practice squad or whether they're bagging groceries or they're selling real estate. So towards the end of the year, all these guys get banged up. All these guys end up on IR. They end up hurt, can't play for whatever reason, then go back. The Giants had an right tackle, Jack Conklin, who they signed from Tennessee. He got hurt. He came back for one game. Now he's on IR for the rest of the year. So if you don't have guys, and if you don't have a good list of guys that come in and take their place, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I think depth has become a big factor with the NFL. You know, it's not just who you got, you know, playing on the field. It's who's your backup, who are even the guys on the practice squad. As far as depth, it's important to have that all the way down the line. I want to ask you this, just to venture real quick off of the NFL track. So with college, I know obviously the playoff, they want to expand it. In terms of what your thoughts are you of the same mindset where players would the players probably wouldn't be in favor necessarily of sticking to 12 games? Of course, these are amateur athletes at this point still, so they don't have much of a say. But theoretically, you could say these guys at 18, 19, 20 years old are playing what would likely be about 18 games if they were to play full 12 conference title game, and then if they were in the first round of the playoffs, they would end up playing about a full NFL season. Is that something that you would be a little bit worried about, or just similarly, you don't think much is going to change given the amount of money that could come to a 12-team playoff, for example?
That's a lot of games for college players. You got to think a lot of these guys were playing high school last year. You look at Alabama's roster or Clemson's roster, Ohio State, how many guys that you hear on TV that say, he's a freshman, he's a true freshman? That means they were playing high school last year. Mm. Well, that means they were getting ready for prom in a couple of months. I just think it's a lot of wear and tear. A male athlete, he is at his prime at 26 years old, not at 19. 19, he still got acne. He's still trying to figure out if he can grow a mustache or not, if he's got chin hair. That's a lot of games. I think what would be fair if they decide to do something like that is eliminate regular season games. So instead of playing a 10 or 11 team schedule, go down to 9 or 8 games. Now, the problem with that is not every team is going to go to the playoffs. You take Wake Forest, if they're only going to play 8 games, whereas before they were going to play 10 or 11, it just adds. And traditionally during the holidays is when you have finals, and then players go on break. They have at least a month off. Then they're required to come back and practice all that time. And how many of these guys are going to go on to play the NFL anyway? 2%?
Very few, yeah.
7%? So, and then are they getting paid? Where's the money going? No, it's going to the school. It's going to improvements of the school and facilities, et cetera, but it's not going to the players. So I don't know. And another thing that bothers me about college football is the tradition in college football is the bowl games. Mm-hmm. Everybody at the end of the year wanted to go to a good bowl game. They didn't want to go to the Tangerine Bowl, but they'd love to go to the Orange Bowl. They'd love to go to the Sugar Bowl. They'd love to go to these big games, the Cotton Bowl, the Rose Bowl. They don't want to go to the Hooters Bowl or whatever. And that has been fallen by the wayside as to the importance and the tradition of these bowls. Now, there is a system. Let's say that you allow 8 teams to go into the playoffs. Let's say that your first round are all bowl games. So you've got 1 against 8 in the Sugar Bowl and 2 against 7 in another bowl and so on and so forth. The winners of those, they go to 2 bowl games. So you've got 2 of them, one of them playing in the Outback Bowl and one of them playing in the Fiesta Bowl, and then the winners play in another bowl game. So now here they're playing in the Orange Bowl. Then you can rotate all those, whether it's the same 7 bowls or whether you have a list of, say, 12 to 15 to 20 bowls that just rotate in all the time. Now, I would imagine it would be a very short list of 7, 8, 10 bowls that are the major bowls. There's no reason for them to go to Memphis to play in a bowl game or go to Orlando to play in a bowl game, or Mobile has a bowl game. Mm-hmm. I can see that be stricken off the list. But what if all of these playoff games were indeed bowl games? Would that work?
Yeah, it would. And sorry, I just randomly hopped back into the conversation here. Sorry, been downstairs blowing my nose for about 20 minutes here.
What's but your when, show,
hey, I know, but listen.
It is. That is exactly what I tell
okay,
him, Barry.
I know.
It is his
you
show.
Know, I don't ever look at it. I you know that. Anybody talking on the show, it's everyone's show. That's what I hope it always is. That's what sports should be. But when it comes down to it, Barry, I will say the one thing that you're saying is so vital to the future. Maybe not today, but for the future of the game, because bowl games are getting more relevant. And it's not that I'm not saying this to disrespect bowl games. It's the truth. I used to go to bowl games as a kid, and everybody would play.
Yeah.
Like when we watched when yeah. I you would watch the best players play. Tom Brady would battle it out when Alabama played against a team like Michigan in the Orange Bowl. That game meant a lot to both those fan bases. If you ask them traveling there, the thing is, if you talk about games today, if it's not the big game, a lot of the best athletes are opting out. They're opting out like crazy. I mean, you had Florida and Oklahoma. Those are two powerhouse names of football. And about 90% of the NFL draft pick guys for Florida were not playing last year. They didn't want to play. And the thing is, yeah. It's not going to change. It's going to get worse. As name, image, and likeness and money starts to set in, it's going to get worse. So you could play that 5 versus 12, 6 versus 11, 7 versus 10, and 8 versus 9 game and have it be the Peach Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, the Orange Bowl. Then the next games that you play down the road, when those teams win, and now you have 8 teams left, and those teams play,
right.
Those 4 games are the games like you start adding a couple others, like the Cotton Bowl, not the Cotton Bowl, but a couple others that are the bigger bowl games that aren't on that list, like an Alamo Bowl, games like that. Yeah, Fiesta Bowl, Alamo Bowl, some of those like that. And now you've just made about 16 to 17 bowl games, Orange Bowls, Gator Bowls, more relevant, Outback Bowls. And now all these bowl games mean something, and you're watching a college football playoff game. And it can work. And for the people saying they play way too many games, I know what you're talking about with the 19 and growing the facial hair. Look, I'm 37. I still deal with that. But at the same time, most people at 19, they're not full adults yet. And you see the development. If you look at Giannis Antetokounmpo's body when he first came into the league in the NBA to now, it's like a man against a boy. I mean, like he would destroy his early self the way he looks. But
yeah.
The difference is a lot of those guys are like that. A lot of quarterbacks are like that. And I think the biggest thing we have here is we can do this. And the naysayers keep saying it's way too much football. I'm looking right behind Drew's head right now. He's like, is there something there? Shall we? It's an 11-4 football by UWF. That means that UWF, building a program from scratch, this is their second year. That ball was in their second year when Mike Beaudry was the quarterback. They played 15 games that year in their second year as a program.
Right.
So for people saying, oh, we can't play more than the one bowl game, making it 13, UWF played 15. They're still breathing. They're still kicking. They're still fine. We can have it where
– well, the argument is if you're –
we can take off a few regular season games.
Yeah.
Yeah, which
so
is
– if you go from 12 to 10
– well, even 11. Well, just at least –
I think you have to make it an even number.
If you do make it 10, though, there are always that game with like – Mount St. Union and Charleston that they can take away anyway from the Power Five from
yes,
the
you
groups.
Take one, you take away two non-conference games. And
exactly,
it,
and you make them you make them play. And you know what? And that will still leave if it's an 8-game or 9-game conference schedule. You can still have that neutral site Ohio State Oregon matchup if you want. You can still have that. We just are taking away the games where you know Samford playing Florida. I mean, what is it? It was a mockery for Florida because they almost lost a game to a team, but they still won by 16. Like that was what like that game doesn't need to be played. You know, those are the games right there. So to me, we could pull this off, and I think we need to. And it's not because I believe that there's 12 teams that are national champions, but it's better overall for the college football if they do this.
Yeah, and I have a problem with that too, because see, Samford gets paid, let's just say, $1.2 million to play at Florida. Florida's never going to play in Birmingham against Samford. But Samford needs that $1.2 million.
They do.
And so
I know.
when you only play against teams to do strength of schedule, you eliminate a lot of those teams that absolutely need and want to be on television, want to be – yeah, they know they're going to get beat 56-7. They know that. But they need that money and that – makes their program, because see, their stadium only holds 26,000 people, but they would love to go and play in a big stadium. None of their players are going to go on to the NFL, the Canadian Football League or the Arena League or in these other indoor leagues, but they get to play in front of a big crowd, in front of a television crowd, and they need that money. And see, when you do all this strength of schedule and you start eliminating that and saying, well, you know, Florida hadn't played anybody, or Miami hadn't played anybody, or nobody in the ACC hadn't played anybody, you start dictating in the boardroom what's going to happen on the field. I hate that committee thing. I hate it with a passion. 2011, the New York Football Giants went 9-7. They were 7-7 at one time. They won their last two games. They played all their games but one on the road. They beat the number two team, the Packers. They beat the number one seed. Then they played the 18-0 New England Patriots in the Super Bowl and won. What does that tell you? A seven-loss team on the field got hot and dictated their own future, and not somebody sitting in a boardroom clicking the top of a pen.
Yeah, you're right. I could. There are a lot of counters. My nose is itching. I don't want to go down too far. You know, I can ramble, but I would say the only thing, Barry, to counter your point there would be that NFL teams are made up of all Americans, elite players. I mean, all over that field, you had Michael Strahan's. You had guys like Tiki Barber. I mean, Brandon Jacobs. You had guys that were Hall of Famers. Where in college, even a team like Cincinnati that's proven to the world they should be there. But let's take a team, let's say the 12th team that might get in, like a Wake Forest. Let's say Wake Forest was 12. Let's just say they maybe have one or two guys that are the caliber athlete of the 30 to 40 on an Alabama.
I agree, 100%.
Okay, so I mean that's the only counter. The only counter is that the NFL, it's closer to be equal in the NFL with one or two great players. Like, you could swap a team in Tampa that hasn't made the postseason in 5 years and bring in Tom Brady and they win the Super Bowl compared to, and they did bring in some linemen and Leonard Fournette. I'm not just saying him, but at the same time, it's easier to swap in the NFL than it is to have a team like an Iowa randomly 1 year beating Alabama. But you know what? I would love to see it. I mean, I'm not against it. And I always believe if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. So I hate when teams use excuses like we don't want to play. When Pete Shinnick lost, they shouldn't have had to play against Newberry this year at home. They did, and they lost. And the thing was, they should have got that bye, but Pete Shinnick and that entire team made no excuse for why they lost that game. No excuse. It was
Look at last year in the playoffs. They played almost all their games on the road and still won.
Yeah, it just that's the thing.
It's hard to win on the road.
Yes, it is. But to get back to the NFL here, Barry, because I know we could go on all day here with this topic. With the NFL right now, the playoffs, what team do you see maybe that other people aren't seeing getting hot at the right time? Because honestly, I think you could like close your eyes and with like six teams in the AFC – point and wherever it lands, that team has a legit shot of winning that conference this year. Who do you see maybe as a dark horse in the playoffs this year?
Well, the Patriots are on fire. They've won what, seven in a row? The Arizona Cardinals are on fire. They are now 10-2, and they have the best record in the NFL. Those two are the kings. Those are both royalties of their conference. But I think a team that's up and coming that nobody's really talking about is the Washington football team. They're 6-6, and yes, they aren't leading their division. They're two games out of first place, but they have won four in a row. And part of that four is beating the Buccaneers 29-19. So they have proven that they can stay with somebody. Now, they lost to the Chiefs. They lost to the Packers. So they've lost, and they lost to the Bills. They've lost to some good teams, but they've won four in a row and are knocking on the Cowboys' door. Now, if you look at the Dallas Cowboys, are they really the class of that division? They keep beating bad teams like the Saints, the Falcons, the Vikings. Now they did beat the Chargers, and they did beat the Patriots. One of the few Patriot losses, 35-29. But they're beating bad teams like the Eagles and the Giants. So they're leading that division, but that would be a division to watch is if the Washington football team can come back and take over the Cowboys' loss.
Yeah, and I'm a little surprised Mike McCarthy came out today and said, we're winning this game. I know he was asked the question and all, but still – the thing is, you don't have to paint that bullet on your back. Like, you're expected to win. First off, you're Dallas. Even the years that they're 5-11, they're expecting their team to go 16-0. So it's Dallas that we all know that. But the difference is, at the same time, when you say we're going to win, If they turn around and don't win this game, which, like you said, Washington's won four straight. They're a good football team right now. If they don't, now all of a sudden, you just put yourself in a very precarious situation where the fans, you just told everybody, this, we're going to win, and then you lose. That's just not a – to me, there's no point of painting that bullet on your back.
Absolutely. And we know the Patriots are hot. But do you also know that the Miami Dolphins have won five in a row? They're in the same division, but they beat the Ravens, which is the only good team in that five-game stretch, but they are still winning games. They play the Jets and the Saints, but then their last two games they end up with the Titans and the Patriots. So we're going to find out if they can get one of those last two seeds. But they've won five in a row. Of course, the Patriots have won seven in a row. And that's a testament to Bill Belichick, and their defense is playing lights out. I don't think I've ever seen a game where a team threw as little as they did and still won. That's just impressive to me.
It was three passes. that's all he had to do. We sort of joked it was like the kid in the group project that. You know, he sits in the back. He never showed up for class, and the rest of the people met at the library, did all this stuff, and he got an A with the rest of them and then, like, walked up to the stage and shook hands and waved as they all got the grade. So,
yeah,
he didn't have to do much, but they won the game. And, I think that's
– And they couldn't stop him. I think that was the
crazy – Ramondre Stevenson, man.
Ooh. I mean, it's almost – I don't want to compare it to this because I think it's a bad comparison, but it's almost like, given the weather, it's almost like when you prepare for Army. You know they're running the ball every single time, but if you can't stop them, you can't stop them. And, I mean, for the amount of times the Patriots ran the ball, they controlled the clock phenomenally well. Mac Jones didn't turn the ball over. It was one of those weird games that it was just domination, really, by the Patriots. They played so good on defense, they didn't have to throw the ball barely at all. Where I don't remember how many times Josh Allen threw it, but they weren't able to be efficient because the Patriots defense was able to get those stops and manage that game very well.
And Buffalo has a very bad run game too, which is weird because you're a team that's going to play four or five games in that weather to be that bad.
They run it more than they did last year, but still, it's not great.
Yeah.
They're a team set up for defense. They got a defensive coach. Well, Bill Belichick, when he coached the Giants in the 90s, the Giants were famous for just being ball hogs on offense and just running it down their throat. And he's always kind of had that mentality. That's why if you look at the Patriots throughout the years, except for Randy Moss, except for Gronkowski, you really can't name a whole lot of receivers. Or if you can name a whole lot of receivers, I guarantee you they're not in the top 100 of receiving yards in each particular year. So they've dominated on he picks good offensive linemen. He always builds that offensive line. The Giants did that. He's always got a great tight end. We'll look at Mark Bavaro with the Giants. Zeke Moat was always in the Pro Bowl. So the Patriots are doing what the Giants did in the 90s with the same kind of MO, run the ball, pound the ball, control the clock, build a great defense, always have a good kicker, and have a quarterback that's a game manager. Phil Simms was never a great quarterback. He was an exceptional quarterback, but he wasn't phenomenal Hall of Fame quarterback. That's the way I see Mac Jones. I think Mac Jones is an incredible specimen. He could win Offensive Rookie of the Year if it wasn't for Jonathan Taylor, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, Taylor's second year, right? Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's my okay. Bad. No, listen, you're the historian here. Once in a while, the professor, the kid raises his hand. I mean, I could, but no, listen, I could tell you though, Barry, it's one where it's going to be an exciting year, just to see this how it shakes out, because that's another team you mentioned in the Colts, and you know, I know Drew's a Bengal fan, but growing up in Indy, he read a lot about the team, and this is a team that I think the big thing with them is they've got the athletes. Their defense is loaded with talent with Leonard and guys like Buckner up front. But the difference is you got the run game. You got Quentin Nelson back. Michael Pittman's an actual number one receiver. The difference is can Carson Wentz play three or four games straight without screwing up? I don't think I can answer that. I don't think anybody can answer that right now.
Yeah, they're 6-2 in their last eight games. So they're right in the thick. They had, I think they started the year 0-3. So that put them in a hole right away. And, of course, they're in a division where the Titans should dominate. But look at the rest of their division. They're going to have two W's against the Texans, two W's against the Jaguars. So there's four right there. So you're already in the plus when you're in a division like that. Of course, the Titans look real good. They've got a running game, even though Derrick Henry's not even in the game anymore. But they have a running game by committee. They've got two backs that they're pulling in and out. The Colts play the Patriots this week on Sunday night. That's going to be an incredible game for both of them. Then they play the Cardinals and they play the Raiders and they close out against the Jaguars. So there could be three losses against good teams. There could be 2-2. But I think they're a team to watch, and that Patriots-Colts game is going to be one that's going to tell us a lot about the Patriots and going to tell us a lot about the Colts.
Well, I think that, you know, this is an opportunity for them to make a statement. You know, I think there's question as to, you know, how much of a contender are the Colts. Are they actually a team that can be, you know, are they a force to be reckoned with in the playoffs, or are they a team who's okay, who will make the playoffs, but they just can't beat the good teams? I mean, going and playing back-to-back the Patriots and the Cardinals, if they find a way to get the job done in both of those, say they go 3-1 in that last four-game span, that means you beat either the Patriots or the Cardinals. I mean, I think that would be a good way to finish the season. And I think one of the things about them, too, is from at least having friends who watch the Colts on a regular basis back in Indiana, Frank Reich's play calling, I think, has drawn some criticism where they don't run the ball quite enough. I know there was a video that was posted. Quentin Nelson walked up to Frank Reich and said, man, we need to run the ball more. We got to give him the ball. Because there was a period of time where he just wasn't getting the ball. And I think the, you know, the players recognize it. I think fans have recognized that he's one of the best backs in the league. And Carson Wentz, to me, I think, is the best quarterback, the best version of himself when there's a good run game and they can run that play action, because he's capable of making throws. It's just, if you got that run game to balance it, I think that makes them a lethal weapon that is very tough to deal with for defenses.
Absolutely, and they're built to run the ball. They've got an exceptional offensive line, and they've spent a lot of money on their offensive line. And because the offense does what the offensive line dictates. You know, the Colts have the number two scoring offense in the NFL behind Tampa Bay. They're only a few points off of Tampa Bay, so they can score points. They have to rely on their defense to get off the field so the offense can get back on the field. So that's the main thing, is if their defense can come through, because you don't want to go into a game that where you have to win 48-45 every week. And that's the telltale, but they can definitely score points.
Well, Barry, always great stuff. We could talk all day. I know you guys covered a lot when I was downstairs as well, but we do have to take our break right here. Anything that you're writing on this week with dogsbynature.com that we can promote?
I just did a playoff watch. I do that about this time every year, so it takes, and it's up right now. I just did an interview with a former GM of the Giants. He's the one that traded for Eli Manning, Ernie Accorsi. I was able to do an interview with him about a month ago, and I finally put it together. He drafted Bernie Kosar with Cleveland. He also was with the Colts and drafted John Elway, and that's the one where Elway said he wasn't going to play, and they ended up trading him. But he grew up a Colts fan. Before I go, let me give you an idiom.
Oh, always, yeah.
Since we're talking about offensive linemen, I'm going to give you pancake. Now, we know a pancake is when an offensive line just flattens a player. And usually what happens is the defensive player's on the ground and the offensive lineman is on top of him. And that's called a pancake. Now, prior to the 1985 NFL draft, the University of Pittsburgh had an offensive lineman coming out. He was a guard named Bill Frelich, who ended up going to the Falcons. But back then, the offensive stars who got all the publicity and all the ink. So they wanted to build him up. So the publicists at the University of Pittsburgh came up with a statistical gauge four offensive linemen of what their dominating performances are, and they invented the word pancake. And so they came up with all these stats of how many pancakes Bill Frelick had. So you think about it, at one point, Bill Frelick was the only one that had any pancake stats at all for one offseason.
That's crazy. It's like a one-man IHOP right there.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, and Orlando Pace can thank him for that, because I know that that one year, Orlando Pace, they said if they even counted him correctly for Ohio State, he would have, like, broken every record and every single – he was a man amongst his time that was probably more of guys today.
Huge man.
Yes, he was. Yes. All right. Well, hey, appreciate it.
I enjoyed my time with y'all.
Thank you, Barry. Have a blessed day.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.